It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. It wouldn't be oversimplifying or an exaggeration to say that West Aliquippa native and University of Pittsburgh graduate Jesse Steinfeld single-handedly changed attitudes about smoking in America. After receiving his medical degree from Case Western Reserve University, he taught medicine at UC San Francisco and later moved to the National Cancer Institute. When Richard Nixon was elected president in 1968, he chose Dr. Steinfeld to be his Surgeon General, and he immediately began a campaign against cigarette smoking that eventually led to it being banned in many public places. Jesse Steinfeld died last week at the age of 87 from complications of a stroke. Joining us now to remember his life and accomplishments is Stanton Glantz, professor of tobacco control at UC San Francisco. Stanton Glantz, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Well, thank you for having me.
Dr. Steinfeld was not the first Surgeon General to warn about the hazards of smoking, but he certainly changed the conversation. Can you talk about the approach that he took from the day he took office?
Well, I don't know about since the day he took office, because I was in high school then. I was in college, actually. But the thing that he did in 1972 was he was the first government official, let alone Surgeon General, to call for a non-smoker's Bill of Rights and to say that cigarette smoke is indoor air pollution. And just as we know that pollution outdoors is bad, it stands to reason that worse pollution indoors is bad too. And to just give you an appreciation of how radical that view was, in 1972 you could still smoke in elevators. And the suggestion he made, which was that we have no smoking sections, that we that the smokers all sit on the same side of the conference room, and that workplaces allow the non-smokers areas of their own, was just viewed as radical. The tobacco companies went completely berserk and ultimately put pressure on Nixon to get rid of, successfully put pressure on Nixon to fire Steinfeld. And today, the positions that the tobacco companies were attacking Steinfeld for taking were actually weaker than what the cigarette companies themselves are advocating.
Well, Dr. Steinfeld certainly was asking for certain general rules about smoking to protect people's health. At a time when, as you said, the society was very different from the way that it is now. What led him to do this? What made this such a passionate mission for him?
Well, I mean, I met him many years later, and he's a very smart guy. He's a very honest guy. And he, like C. Everett Koop, who the two of them were probably the two most important Surgeon Generals in terms of the tobacco issue, saw smoking in a much broader context and recognized that it was more than just a personal health issue, but that it was affecting bystanders, that it was in large part a political and social problem. And his willingness to aggressively basically speak the truth in terms of what the scientific evidence was showing, and among other things, he said that the claim that the tobacco companies were making, that it was still an open question whether smoking was dangerous or not, was just wrong, that was a closed question, helped to lead to better warning labels on cigarettes, and again, started the process of social change, which has led to, you know, well over half the country and much of the world now being free from secondhand smoke.
And back in the late 60s, early 70s, one of the things that Jesse Steinfeld fought for was to change the labeling on cigarette packs, which went from, the warning label went from, quote, caution, cigarette smoking may be hazardous to your health, end quote, to, quote, warning, the Surgeon General has determined that cigarette smoking is dangerous to your health, end quote. So he pushed for that along the lines of what you're saying, that there was no longer a debate. This issue has been decided, and smoking is something that will kill you eventually, to the point where Jesse Steinfeld, the reason I brought up from the moment he took office, is that there's the story that he walked into his office, the office of Surgeon General, and there were all these ashtrays, about a dozen of them. And he immediately threw them away and put up signs that said, "Thank you for not smoking."
Right. And, you know, again, that today, that's like, well, what's the big deal, you know? But back then, that was just considered just over the top. I mean, I got involved in the tobacco issue in 1978, which 6 years later after he issued his 1972 report. And at that point, the executive director of the American Lung Association here in California was a chain smoker, and the American Heart Association was putting cigarettes and ashtrays out on the table at its board meetings. And so, you know, the kinds of things he was doing were just jarring in terms of changing the social norms. And the cigarette companies clearly saw him as a huge threat, and that's why they used their political muscle to push him out. I mean, unfortunately, I mean, the big success he had was getting the warning labels improved in the early 70s. Unfortunately, we still have those same warning labels on cigarettes today, when our knowledge has gone way past what we knew even back then. And for example, the United States is one of the few countries in the world now that doesn't have pictorial warnings, pictures showing rotting lungs and the other bad things smoking does right on the cigarette packs. And the Obama administration is still dragging its feet on, you know, imposing really stiff regulations on tobacco products.
We're talking with Stanton Glantz. He is professor of tobacco control at the University of California at San Francisco, about the life and the accomplishments of the late West Aliquippa native and University of Pittsburgh graduate, Dr. Jesse Steinfeld, who passed away last week at the age of 87. He was Surgeon General for Richard Nixon from 1969 to 1973. Talk about the kind of courage it took for Jesse Steinfeld to be an aggressively anti-cigarette smoking Surgeon General back in the late 60s and early 70s, considering the type of the attitudes that existed, as you outlined earlier in our discussion?
Well, you know, the tobacco companies are still tremendously politically powerful. They have a lot of money, they have a lot of lobbyists, and they have no ethics. And that's a tremendously potent combination in politics. And back then, they were even more powerful. And so publicly taking them on required a lot of personal courage. And in fact, at one point, he was prohibited from testifying in front of Congress by the Nixon administration for about the dangers of smoking. And what ended up happening was the Congress subpoenaed him, and he showed up and spoke very forthrightly about what the evidence showed. And that's still something that often requires a great deal of courage. When, you know, if you look at what's going on today in issues around global warming, there are many examples of scientists being hindered in what they can say. And the Obama White House, after, you know, pledging to end the kind of scientific muzzling that went on under the Bush administration, is still very sensitive about what government scientists say on a wide variety of issues. So, you know, there's still a need for people to have the kind of courage of their convictions to tell the public the truth about what science is showing.
Why didn't the Nixon administration back him up?
Well, it was all politics. The tobacco companies were a big source of campaign money. They support Republicans more than Democrats, but they give the Democrats enough money generally to keep them be behaving themselves from the industry's point of view. They can afford the best lobbyists, the most connected lobbyists. They hire, and they're mean. And if politicians or public health officials cross them, they go out and try to take them out, as they did with Steinfeld. In fact, under Carter, Joseph Califano, the Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare, was forced out by tobacco interests for taking too strong an anti-tobacco stand. And there are examples all over the country, in fact, all over the world, of health department directors, tobacco control program administrators, health ministers in other countries who come under huge pressure by the tobacco companies and the politicians that they own if they take meaningful actions to protect public health. So the problem goes on, and the need for the kind of principled moral position to tell the public what the science shows that Steinfeld exemplified, it's still necessary today, not just on tobacco, but on a wide range of issues.
How did Richard Nixon justify getting rid of him? I mean, he was doing his job as Surgeon General. I'm sure he, or at least I'm guessing that he didn't come right out and say, well, you know, the tobacco
What Nixon did, and this is a, you know, common political trick,
sure,
is he said, well, I want to see, the Surgeon General is appointed for a fixed term. It's a 4-year term, which is in the law to try to prevent it from being politicized. And what Nixon did is he went to a whole series of officials and just said, I want all of you to submit your resignations, and including Dr. Steinfeld. And then the only one that he accepted was the one from Steinfeld. That's how he forced him out, even though he had a term. Now, I suppose Steinfeld could have refused to submit his resignation, but he didn't. I don't know why. But, I mean, it's a fairly common thing in Washington when a new administration comes in or a new administration starts, for the president to ask political appointees, and the Surgeon General is a political appointee, to submit their resignations as a routine matter so that the president can pick and choose who he wants to keep. And it happens that was the only one he accepted. Now, the Surgeon General position is still a highly politicized position. I mean, right now, the former Surgeon General's term ended and she stepped down. And President, I don't remember the name of the person, but President Obama appointed or nominated someone to be Surgeon General who had the temerity to, in his past, have said gun control is a good idea, that the epidemic of gun violence is a public health problem. And because of that, the National Rifle Association came out against them, and the Democrats in the Senate have been too frightened to confirm his nomination. So we currently have an acting Surgeon General, Boris Lubinsky, who's a member of public servant, a member of the Public Health Service. Now, he's a great guy, and I think he also is willing to get up and say what he thinks the truth is. And so, I think we're lucky to have him there. But we still have political interference, this time from the National Rifle Association, in who's appointed Surgeon General. And I'm sure the tobacco companies are off there in the shadows helping to block it, too.
Let's take a call from Grant in Allison Park. Grant, you're on with Stanton Glantz.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call. I had a question. How did this Surgeon General that you're speaking about,
Jesse Steinfeld?
Yes. How did he become a Surgeon General in his early 40s? Normally, people that give this such a high bureaucratic position are in their 50s or 60s or 70s at such an early age. I'll just take the answer.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I do know from just reading the obituaries, he was active in Republican politics. And so that's why, and Nixon had met him and liked him, and that's why he appointed him Surgeon General. I mean, obviously you don't have teenagers appointed to the job, but, you know, people, I don't think you wait till people are in their 50s, 60s, or 70s.
Without Jesse Steinfeld, how long would it have taken for smoking to be banned in so many public places?
Well, that's, you know, it's very hard to answer that question. The non-smokers' rights movement was beginning at a grassroots level. At about that time, there was a woman in New Jersey named Donna Shimp who worked for the phone company and sued the phone company saying that they didn't allow smoking around the equipment and they shouldn't be allowed to allow smoking around her. And, you know, won the case. And so there was a lot of grassroots activity beginning around the country of people who were just saying, you know, I don't want to be exposed to this air pollution caused by cigarette smoke. But there's just no question that having a high-level government official making formal public pronouncements, publishing in the 1972 Surgeon General's report the argument and the evidence that cigarette smoke was air pollution, accelerated the process. And it legitimized the concerns, which is a very, very important part of the debate. I mean, there, if you look at the history of the passive smoking issue, there were a few key events which moved the issue forward. One was Jesse Steinfeld's calling cigarette smoke indoors air pollution and calling for a non-smoker's Bill of Rights. Another was C. Everett Koop's report in 1986, the first entire report on secondhand smoke. And in 1991, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency did a risk assessment of secondhand smoke and called it a Class A human carcinogen. And those and some other things that followed really substantially accelerated public understanding of the problem and legitimized the issue for policymakers, mostly at the local level, to start passing clean indoor air laws. There in Pennsylvania, you have a problem because the movement was getting going there, and the tobacco companies went into your legislature and got a law passed taking away the rights of local communities to restrict smoking. And there was an attempt last year to repeal that. It's called preemption, which the tobacco companies defeated.
We've been talking with Stanton Glantz, professor of tobacco control at the University of California at San Francisco, about the life and accomplishments of Aliquippa native and former Surgeon General Dr. Jesse Steinfeld, who died last week at the age of 87. Stanton Glantz, thank you so much for joining us here on Essential Pittsburgh. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me.
Coming up, we'll look at the business of child care with correspondent Rebecca Harris. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.